If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome, Irish fans, to another edition of the Irish Breakdown Podcast. I am Vince D'Addario. I am the football analyst here at IrishBreakdown.com. And with me, as always, is Brian Driscoll. He is the publisher of IrishBreakdown.com. And as we promised in yesterday's podcast, today we're going to bring the heat, Brian, is really what it comes down to. We've talked many times about, you know, where Notre Dame stands in comparison to other programs, other top elite, tier one, however you want to categorize teams. We've talked about Notre Dame and whether they fit in that category. And I think the consensus is that not yet. They're knocking on the door, but are they going to bust through the door, or are they going to take a step back, or are they just going to stay at the door like an annoying, relative that you don't really want to let in the door? Where is Notre Dame going to go here? And we've talked many times about how this is a pivotal year. This is a pivotal offseason for this program, we believe, with the schedule coming up, with the turnover offensively, and with the schedule in 22. In today's podcast, Brian and I are going to kick around our thoughts on where Notre Dame needs to go from a philosophical mindset offensively. Not scheme, not X's and O's per se. That podcast is coming. Yes, that podcast is coming. But to start, if I was putting together a staff, or Brian was putting together a staff, when you first meet with your staff, it's okay, who do we want to be?
Right.
What is our philosophy?
Your scheme will come from that.
That's exactly right. And so that's how the conversation goes, right? So like my baseball team, what kind of team do we want to be? Mm-hmm. And then you figure out, okay, here's how we get to be that team. What is the scheme? Are we going to bunt? Are we going to, what does that mean?
And you build it around who you are as a program, but exactly. Who you are as a program is partly determined by what kind of players you have.
Oh, and that is so true.
Right. Yes. So what we're not going to say in this philosophical change is they have to go away from two tight ends. They have to go away from, really good running the football team. They have to go away from being driven by the offensive line. None of those things have to change.
Yeah, absolutely not.
We'll get into that. More so the next one. But that I want to make sure that that's what people understand. Because I think there's this notion that when people hear you got to be explosive and high-powered, that means 3-4 receivers. And
that means Oregon's offense from 10 years ago.
Right. And that's not what we're saying. We're not saying you need to go run the air raid that USC is running, because I would say there are better versions of the air raid that run the ball a lot. Go watch Lincoln Riley's offense,
Right.
So we're not saying that Notre Dame has to try to replicate exactly what program A, B, or C is doing. If you go look, if you think this is about throwing the ball a million times a game and not running the ball, go look at Clemson's rushing numbers in 2019 and 2018. Go, you know, that simple. Go look at Ohio State's rushing numbers this year. Go look at Oklahoma's rushing numbers throughout the years, and then we'll talk, and then you'll understand that this isn't about not running or throwing it a million times or needing to get four and five receivers on the field all the time. That is not what we're saying. You can have the personnel that Notre Dame has and be a explosive high-scoring offense, and that's what we'll dive into, because it's not about the players as much. And it's not even as much about the plays, because there's a lot of plays that if Notre Dame changed philosophies, that would still be the same.
Yes.
It is a change in mindset. It is a change in philosophy, which means how you go about your business every day. And it will impact how you recruit, but it's not going to be this sweeping dramatic changes that some people, I think that need to happen. And those are the things we'll get into. It's really about who at your heart as a program do you want to be, and what is your philosophy on how you go about your business on an everyday basis. And that, to me, is what needs to change. And the evidence is so obvious that's where Notre Dame wants to be if their program goal is truly to compete for championships.
And that's not to cut you off there, Brian, but that's exactly my point is, okay, what is your goal as a program?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if your goal is to compete for national titles, well, then you have to look at the lay of the land. What are teams doing that are competing for national titles? What do those numbers look like? And to build on your point, there's many, many, many ways to skin a cat,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't have to have a certain scheme in order to score points. And that's, mm-hmm. that's the bottom line. When you're looking at teams that are winning titles, and teams that are consistently in the conversation for winning titles, it's PPG, points mm-hmm. per game,
mm-hmm.
okay? And right now, Notre Dame is lacking significantly mm-hmm. in that category. And there are many ways to score points, okay?
Right.
The Citadel can score points running the triple option, right?
Are you trying to upset me today? Are you trying to anger me today? Are you tripping? Is that why you're bringing up the triple? I saw your face as soon as you said it.
Because I saw
you
yours.
Knew what you were doing.
Look, I cover a team locally that runs the triple option, and they mm-hmm. average like 40 points a game.
Right.
And so the bottom line is, and I'm not in any way telling Notre Dame that they need to go to the triple option.
Yeah, because you just got a couple fans really excited. There are some people that think the triple option is the way to go for Notre Dame. Yeah.
Hey, I am not an anti-option guy as much as you are. I've spent too much
time. I am at a place like Notre Dame.
Me too.
That's me too. There are certain places where, like, if Army ever hired a coach that wasn't a triple option guy, I'd say then you need to fire whoever hired that guy.
Right, absolutely.
You know, same with Navy. There
because
are some places.
Personnel.
Right. Some places you need to do it. At a place like Notre Dame, it would be a limiting factor. Although I don't think they'd score any less than they are now.
Well, they're not good right now, but I'm with you on that one. But the point of a triple option is it allows less talented kids to compete with talented kids.
It's a neutralizer to a degree.
That's exactly right.
Right.
So,
right.
But that's again a
but,
whole
but,
other.
But honestly, let's dive into this, Vince. Let's first talk about what Notre Dame's philosophy is, just briefly, and then the evidence that shows that's not going to work.
Sure.
And I'm not even talking about just Notre Dame's evidence, right? Because you can make a case that Notre Dame let's buy into the mantra that they just weren't good enough in 2018 and 2020 to score more than 17 combined points in their two playoff games. And 31 combined points in their three championship kind of games, and you go back to 2012. Let's just say I hypothetically believe that, okay? The evidence is clear that this is where you need to be as a program, okay? Notre Dame's philosophy under Brian Kelly has evolved over the years. It's changed from time to time.
Okay.
But the philosophy, as far schematically, it has changed. But philosophically, it hasn't evolved a ton. And really what it's boiled down to is he has over the years adopted a very complex pro style type of offense that really you just don't see anymore. And it's become more ball control now, but that's been flexible. They weren't ball control in 2014, for example, but the philosophy is still the same. It's about getting in the perfect play call and really out coaching your opponents and then having to outplay your opponents, because what
in a one-on-one situation.
Correct. Because what this scheme does is it gives a receiver a lot of different options, and and he has to, you know, based on this read and that read, and it's just a very complex system from a pass game standpoint. And part of me wonders if it was something that Kelly kind of evolved to around after 2012, when his interest in the NFL increased. That part of me wonders if that was it, and he just never has gone away from it, because I still believe if the right NFL team came calling, Brian Kelly would listen. You know, so I think that's kind of where it comes from. And now the version that we see now is because they're really good up front and really good at tight end, and they're building, they're tailoring what they do to that personnel, which I have no problem with.
Me neither.
That part of the philosophy I have no problem with. But this notion that Notre Dame is trying to run a ball control offense that will generate some big plays in the pass game down the field, or, you know, whatever the case may be, is really it's a handicap, because basically what they're trying to do, Vince, is they're trying to be like Alabama from 2012, when the reality is Alabama's not even trying to be Alabama from 2012 anymore. And that is that big physical, beat you along the lines, pro style offense. Mm-hmm. And you can be a big physical pro style offense, but you have to be explosive. You have to push the tempo. You have to give your quarterback more options. What you're seeing is it's a complex system that requires maturity to thrive in.
Sure.
Another part of their philosophy is there's no adaptability to the mental part of a player's ability. What I mean by that is they'll adapt schematically to fit certain personnel. They didn't ask Chase Claypool and Miles Boykin to run the same stuff they asked Will Fuller to run. However, what doesn't change is the fact that to play in it, at receiver especially, and at quarterback, you have to have a very deep grasp of the package. And if you don't, then you just don't play. There's no, well, he only knows this, so we're going to let him do that. And you can't do that the way that they run their offense, because then it makes your play calls less effective, because you don't have play calls designed to get guys open. You're getting guys open with their ability and winning matchups, and not the kind of matchups that I want to look for, where just disadvantages, but just, hey, Chase Claypool's better than this guy, and we're just going to go to him. You don't see as much of the let's attack the defense and do a lot of the things that modern offenses are doing to create the kind of advantages vertically that you need. I think what Notre Dame has done a good job of is they do a good job of formationing their way into leverage and numbers advantages in the run game, but they don't do that in the pass game.
Right.
And I think that's hurt them. So that's kind of their philosophy. And the philosophy now is, as Brian Kelly said, it's a ball control, limiting possessions offense. Well, the problem is, you can't do that and win when you play the better teams on your schedule. You just can't. And people say, well, what about Clemson in November? Okay, let's talk about Clemson in November, okay? You don't win that game if you don't get a defensive touchdown, right? We should all be able to agree on that, okay? Mm-hmm. It was 13-10. Clemson was already starting to climb back. They had the ball with a chance to go and take a lead, and Notre Dame forced back-to-back turnovers that allowed them to score 10 quick points to make a 13-10 game, a 23-10 game. You can't rely on doing that every single game.
Right.
You can't.
Right.
And the other part of it is you have to admit that the fact that there was no Trevor Lawrence, Tyler Davis, James Skowski, and Mike Jones did impact that game. You can't, it doesn't take Notre Dame. That was still a very good win for Notre Dame. I'm not trying to change that. But
they
you're
still
not
beat the number one team in the country.
Right. You're not going to have those things break your way all the time.
Right.
And that's the reality of it. And so, but also the other counter to the point of the Clemson game is you don't point to the exception and try to have it be the rule. Right. And that's just something you shouldn't, it's like when people say, well, you know, if so-and-so freshman quarterback was really a great player, he would play as a freshman. Well, what makes you say that? Well, look, Trevor Lawrence did it. Well, you know, you don't point to the exception as the rule. And that's the thing, is you don't point to that one game when I have a 11-year history of Notre Dame not playing well in these games, and more importantly, not playing well on offense in these games.
Right.
There have been times where the defense has played well enough for Notre Dame to be on that stage. And I don't think a lot of fans, some fans don't think that the Notre Dame defense has played well. I've literally seen people talk about how the problem is an offense. It's the defense gives up too many points. And I'm thinking, if you think that, that tells me you watch no one but Notre Dame. Because the reality is, Alabama scoring 31 points against Notre Dame was their season low.
Mm-hmm.
Clemson scoring 30 points in the playoff 2 years ago against Notre Dame was one of their worst offensive outputs of the season, and that was built around three plays. Right. Notre Dame's defense twice now in the playoff has given them a chance to be competitive against the eventual national champion. It's the offense that's lagging behind. And until that changes, Vince, then Notre Dame is going to continue to be a really good program that's not a legitimate title contender. And again, the evidence of why this needs to be the case is right there, and it's easy to find and easy to see.
Yeah, and there's no question. And I appreciate what Notre Dame is doing on the defensive side of the ball. I think that they've got great coaches. I think that they're doing a good job recruiting. I think that the defense is excellent for Notre Dame. The problem is you just can't go into wanting to win a national championship in 2020 and beyond, mm-hmm. thinking that the defense is going to be the strength of your team. You, as you've said many times, defense will get you to the show, but they're not going to win it for you. Mm-hmm. And you've got evidence to back that up. And so let's take a look at some of that data.
Yeah. So first, let's just look at the average points per game of the two teams that have played in the championship game of the college football era. So 2020, it's 48.5 and 41.0. This is going to go winner, runner-up is how it's going to go. 2019, 48.4 and then 43.9. 2018, 44.3, 45.6. 2017, 37.1, 35.4, two SEC teams. 2016, 39.2, 38.8. 2015, 35.1, 38.5. 2014, 44.8, 45.4. Now, some people are going to hear that and say, well, what about that 35.1? That's actually less than what Notre Dame scored in 2018-19 when they averaged 36.8. That 2015 team would be Alabama. Okay. The national championship game that they won that year was 45-40. Alabama scored 38 and 45 in the playoffs.
Right.
So, or in the college football playoffs. So they scored over 40 points per game in the two playoff games. Okay. So, and that's the thing, as you look at Alabama, for example, Alabama in 2018, as good as Alabama is on defense, they gave up 44 and 34 points in 2018. In 2016, in a loss to Clemson, they gave up 35 points.
You're talking about in the college
playoff. College football playoff. Yeah. In 2015, they gave up 40 points to Clemson. And then in 2014, when they lost Ohio State, they gave up 42 points. Mm-hmm. So even a team as good as them is going to give up points. LSU or Clemson in 2019, as good as they were on defense, they gave up 42 points to LSU. And that was actually a pretty good performance to hold LSU to 42 points.
Yeah,
that was almost a touchdown. Well, actually, it was a touchdown below their season average when you consider what their average was before that game. You know, you look at Clemson, and as good as they were on defense in 2016, they gave up 45 points. Or 2015, they gave up 45 points. When they beat Alabama the next year, they scored 35 points. They gave up 31. You know, when you get to this stage, teams are going to score on you. You know, and even Oklahoma, as bad as their defense is, they scored 34 points on Alabama in 2018. You know, so you have to. They scored in the 40s on Georgia in 2017. That game went to overtime. Georgia had to score 50 to win. So there's no evidence that says you can win the way that Notre Dame wins. None.
Yeah, and
the only team that's come close is Bama. And the reality is, you can't be trying to be like Bama. No one's going to be like Bama right now. The goal is to study the teams that are beating Alabama.
Right.
And find out what they're doing, and the way that they're doing it is they're outscoring them. You know, I mean, here's the reality, Vincent. Alabama lost a playoff game in 2018. They gave up 44 points. They lost a playoff game in 2016. They gave up 35 points, and they lost a playoff game, a semifinal game in 2014. They gave up 42 points. So, you know, it's right there. You want to win, you have to score.
You got to score. And what did Notre Dame average this year
33.4. And here's what Notre Dame has averaged the last 7 years of the playoff era. 33.4, 36.8, 31.4, 34.2, 30.9, 34.2, 32.8.
None of those are even in the neighborhood. I mean, those are a touchdown.
The 2019 offense, last year's offense, numbers-wise, was in the ballpark of a couple teams, Alabama's 2017 and 2015 teams. The difference was, is Notre Dame was, they scored 62 points against New Mexico and then scored 52 against Bowling Green. They padded their stats a couple times. And the fact is that, again, when they got into those games against Georgia, they couldn't score enough.
Right.
Against Michigan, they couldn't score enough, you know. So they padded their stats against some inferior opponents. But the fact of the matter is, Vince, you have to score that in the playoff to win.
Not against group of five.
Right, schools. Right. Because we're, you know, it'd be one thing if we're throwing out these point numbers and it's like, well, yeah, they played, you know, Wofford and scored 70 points, right? Like, that's why I wanted to show you what these teams are scoring in the title game. The national title games of the last 7 years. This is the number of points that the winner has scored in the title game. 52, 42, 44, 26, 35, 45, and 42. That's what the team that has won the college football playoff game has scored. In the title game, not per game, in the title game. So, yeah, you want to win a title, you got to score. Now, here's the thing that Notre Dame has going for, Vince. I do think Notre Dame plays good enough defense. They've shown in the last two times they've been in the playoff, they can keep you in the 30s.
Which is the goal in the college football playoff.
And it's even harder when you consider how ineffective their offense has been.
Right.
Because their offense puts no pressure on the opponent whatsoever.
Right. And they've had to be on the field the majority of the time. I mean,
they're
the ones that are expelling most of the energy.
Right.
Because the offense is basically, you know, still back at the end.
What would the defense be able to do if their offense gave them a jump start? If they could jump on an opponent like that teams have done to them. So again, that's the data, the philosophy. We've expressed the philosophy of what Notre Dame has done. We've given you the data. And now our next goal is to say, okay, well, what needs to change? Because, again, what we don't want to do, Vince, is we don't want to be the kind of people that just like to hurl criticisms all the time. And I believe that if you're going to be critical, you better have some sort of constructive criticism to follow it. And so we're gonna try to do that as we kind of dive into those points. But before we do, we have some business we have to attend to, don't we, Vince?
Absolutely. We want to definitely hear from one of our friends of Irish Breakdown Podcast, and we're going to do that right now. Listen, folks, the Super Bowl is coming up, and sure, we'll be watching the game, but the best way to celebrate the biggest day in football is to bet on the game. And we want to let you know about a great resource for sports bettors, the Action Network. The Action Network is where sports fans can go to bet smarter and experience real financial gains. In fact, the Action Network app was recently named the best app in sports betting. And with Action Network Pro subscription, you can unlock the very best of the app. When you sign up for an Action Network Pro subscription, you can access the Pro Report, which includes expert projections for every game across all the professional leagues. You can see money and bet percentages on every game, so you can see the teams professional gamblers are betting on. You can take advantage of pro systems, which match winning historical betting trends with the latest games and lines. You can track every bet you make and get alerts in real time. So if you're looking to bet smarter, an Action Network Pro subscription is the best way to get started. And for a limited time, our listeners can receive 50% off the annual Pro subscription. Just go to actionnetwork.com right now and receive 50% off an annual subscription when you use the code Irish. This offer won't last long, so go to actionnetwork.com to sign up for a pro subscription and use promo code Irish to receive 50% off and start betting smarter today. So, Brian, you wrote an article over on irishbreakdown.com that kind of went through, and you made four points and how Notre Dame can change philosophically and still maintain their identity, frankly. And I want to go through those four points and kind of have a discussion about those points, because they're really good points. And I think it's gonna be fun to kind of kick some stuff back and forth. So the first point that you made in the article is that Notre Dame needs to develop an explosive mindset. And I think, look, any Notre Dame fan that's watched Notre Dame, you know, you can talk about the deep ball, you can talk about whatever you want to talk about. I think everybody can agree that they want this offense to be more explosive. I really hope that they can agree. Even if those people out there that want the triple option, mm-hmm. you still want that to be more explosive. Mm-hmm. So developing that explosive mindset is kind of an all-encompassing thing. It's, again, that's the first thing that you sit down when you're talking about with your coaches. Okay, we want to be an explosive team. All right. Well, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. So continue with your thought process on developing an explosive mindset.
Yeah. So to me, explosive is again, it's not necessarily scheme related. It's not when I say scheme related, it's not spread versus pro style versus whatever. I mean, if you watch Clemson, LSU, Ohio State, and Alabama, they run four different offenses. You know, Ohio State and Clemson have some similarities, as Alabama and LSU had some similarities. And the reason being, Ohio State and Clemson are more spread oriented, with some pro style pass game concepts at Ohio State. LSU and Alabama were more true pro style because they hired NFL guys to run their offense. And so, again, different schemes, but explosive mindset to me is really kind of about how you go about your business every day and how you go about your business in practice, how you go about everything you do and play calling, game planning, everything. And we'll talk more about play calling because you have some points you want to make about specifically how they call plays when we do our scheme breakdown. But for me, when I look at it, an explosive mindset is you're always looking for opportunities to take advantage of the defense. You're always looking for opportunities to put them on their heels. And everything else that we talk about, whether it be some of the philosophical things we'll talk in this podcast, whether it's some of the schematic changes that we're going to talk in the next podcast, it's all built on attacking and being aggressive. That doesn't mean, so here's what explosive mindset does not mean. It does not mean throwing 40-yard, 50, 60-yard bombs every time you draw back and throw the football. I think when you look at Alabama, for example, Alabama did not throw the ball deep at all against Notre Dame. It didn't mean they didn't have an explosive mindset. There was a lot of things they did that were looking for ways to generate explosives against Notre Dame that was not going to be throwing the ball downfield.
Right.
It was more of a horizontal attack. Against Ohio State, however, because different defense, different personnel, more vulnerable to throwing down the field because
they went after
the pass rush, it was more of a vertically oriented attack, right? So schematically, a lot of different things in those two games. Game plan-wise, two completely different game plans from Alabama because they were playing different opponents. But the mindset was always the same. Attack, 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 attack. Run a lot of plays, get the defense on their heels, and look for opportunities. Anytime they had an opportunity to go for a big play, they would take it. But See, to me, big plays and explosive mindset, I don't want a team throwing 10 balls down the field.
That's
or 15 bombs every game, because I don't care. If you're great at throwing the ball deep, you're going to hit half of them. So it's a very inefficient way of going about it. It's all the other things then set up opportunities, and this is where you'll kind of come in later, Vince, when we have our scheme one, is to set up opportunities for those big plays or finding matchups in how they do it. Everything is built on being aggressive. And again, we'll dive more into the specifics of what those mean when we get to the scheme conversation. But aggressive to me is about just exploiting your defense, being aggressive. And again, some of the points we'll get into, we'll get into that. But like this whole control the clock, you know, I've had people say, well, you know, Notre Dame has to be really good at, you know, controlling the clock. And I'm like, well, I think the only person that believes that is Brian Kelly. And then any fan that just believes everything that Brian Kelly says,
yeah,
because there's no
Brian
evidence.
Kelly didn't even believe that when
exactly.
he took the Notre Dame job.
Exactly. He has evolved into that, you know, right. and that's the thing is like, you know, this year, for example, Alabama ranked 44th in time of possession and the two teams they beat in the playoff ranked 7th and 19th in time of possession. Clemson ranked 55th in time of possession this year. Last year, LSU, who obviously won a title last season, ranked 54th in time of possession. Clemson in 2018 was even worse. Clemson in 2018 ranked 96th in time of possession. And so, it's just one of those things where 55th in 2016. There's no evidence that tells me you have to be a ground-and-pound, ball-control,
right.
possessions team. In fact, the best teams in the country are taking the opposite approach. It's score, score any way you have to, score quickly with the mindset of we're going to put a team away. And here's the other thing too. It plays to your defensive strength, because if your defense is as good as Notre Dame's and you jump on a team, that defense can be able to put a team away. Look what happened in the Pitt game. Notre Dame is up 14-3. Defense is shutting Pitt down. Notre Dame gets that second touchdown to go up 14-3, and the defense was able to then turn up, heat up a little bit, and all of a sudden they force turnovers back, right, like on consecutive possessions, and then that game is over.
And that's the thing. And I was about to make that point as well. When defense plays with a lead,
yeah,
you're able to do so many other things.
Right.
Because when you're a defensive-oriented team where you're going to want to win those close games, it's going to be kind of a black and blue type game. Mm-hmm. Defense plays, they play with a feeling that, okay, man, if we make one mistake here, this right. game's over, not in a good way for us. And mm-hmm. so when you have a big lead like that, you could play a little bit more loose. You could play more free, because if you do make a mistake, it's not the end of the world mm-hmm. because your offense is going to go down and score again. And mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. And that then, when you're playing loose, when you're playing free, and Brian Kelly talked about this, he talked about the defense playing loose and playing free. I mean, that was his big thing in the preseason about right. he's never seen the defense so fast and blah, blah, blah. And the sound they make when they hit, you know, you can do all those things when you're playing with a lead. Mm-hmm. And I think that can only benefit your defense. And that's right. going to make the Marcus Freeman Notre Dame defense even better if they're allowed to play with a lead.
And I think a thing that you can look at too, Vince, is you look at Clemson in recent seasons with Brent Venables, very, very aggressive defense, and they'll give up big plays from time to time. But it's one of those things where he can do that because of the type of offense they play.
Exactly.
Notre Dame can't afford to do that. Notre Dame has had to gear their defense towards, we can't give up big plays. We right. have to keep points down, because your offense isn't going to score a ton of points,
right.
not in the big games. And that puts a lot of pressure on your defense. I would love to have seen what Clark Lee could have done with a 17-3 lead on somebody.
Absolutely.
You know, and that would be – that'd be, and I hope that Marcus Freeman gets a chance to do that this year. But you just can't continue to put the kind of pressure on your defense that Notre Dame has right. put on its defense, even this year during the season. I mean, you look at some of the games that Notre Dame won this year. I mean, look, if the defense doesn't create 10 points. The defense – look. The defense scored a touchdown against Clemson, and Notre Dame got 3 points on a drive in which it had negative yards.
Negative yards.
Fumble recovery.
Yes, yeah.
That came a possession after the touchdown.
Right.
Notre Dame lost yards on that drive, but they got the
minus
ball.
Three.
I think so. Yeah. And yeah. it was, but they still got points because they recovered the ball at like the 21 yeah. or 22 yard line, something like that. So
right.
you can't put that kind of pressure on your defense week after week after week. I mean, you can beat Louisville 12-7. You're not beating anybody worth a darn 12-7. It's right. just not going to happen, you know? Right. And they were able to shut down North Carolina, and North Carolina had a great offense this year, but North Carolina doesn't have the personnel that Alabama has and that Clemson has. I think they were coached really well, and they're a very good offense, but again, they don't, and the personnel is more up front. I think athletically, I think North Carolina was as good as anybody Notre Dame played this year, including along with Alabama, just that, you know, Alabama had one great back, North Carolina had two.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but the difference is up front. They didn't have the personnel up front. Well, they're going to keep getting better in that regards. I mean, look, North Carolina can score over 40 points a game in the ACC, but Notre Dame can't.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the other thing.
Hogwash.
But you know, the when I talk about explosive mindset, all the other points are going to be built on that. And it has to be something where it's not just a play calling thing. It's not a game planning thing. It has to be the backbone of who you are. It's Correct. How you go about your strength conditioning program.
Correct.
It's how you go about how you recruit. It's how you go about developing the mentality of your players on how they handle themselves in meetings, how they handle themselves on the practice field. Everything has to be geared towards that. So it's not just as much as saying, hey, you know what? We want to score a bunch this year. So we're going to call some more plays. They're going to give us more chances to take downfield shots. That's not going to get it done. That'll work against Purdue and Navy and teams that aren't good, but that's not going to work.
Toledo.
Yes. It's not going to work against Clinton. It'll work against Wisconsin most likely because they just have better players than Wisconsin. Although Wisconsin's coached extremely well on defense, but basically that's who Notre Dame wants to be right now, is Wisconsin.
Yeah, they're a more talented version of
Wisconsin. Right. And what that does is that guarantees that you're only going to lose to Alabama 31-14 as opposed to 52-24. Woo. The difference between that is Ohio State took their shots. Notre Dame didn't. Ohio State was trying to win. They just weren't good enough on defense.
Sure. Yeah, then that's
their problem.
Yeah.
You give Ohio State's offense Notre Dame's defense, and we might be having a different conversation about how that game went down. I still think Alabama would have won, but it would have been a much more competitive game.
Because in that regard, in that instance, Ohio State had to be perfect on offense.
Correct.
Because they knew if they didn't score on a possession,
right,
that Alabama was going to continue to score, and then they were playing catch up.
I mean, kicking a field goal against Alabama for Ohio State was a loss. It was a failure.
Yeah.
I mean, because your defense could not stop them.
It's the exact opposite of what I was talking about before. It was where Notre Dame's defense plays that they can't give up big plays because they don't have confidence that the offense is going to go down and score. It was the opposite for Ohio State. If the offense doesn't keep scoring, that game is over. And that's what happened.
That's how it was.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame has done what it needs to do defensively. And I'm not someone that believes that by being a more explosive offense that you put more, you make it harder to play defense. I think your defense has to be on the field for more possessions. That may result in an extra field goal or touchdown per game. But if your defense is able to get stops, they're going to be able to get stops. And I think it's even easier to get stops when you score more points. And people say, well, look at Oklahoma. Oklahoma's problem is philosophical when it comes to their defensive struggles. It's not because their offense is conducive to that, because look at Clemson. Clemson's been a high-octane, high-powered offense, and they have very good defenses most years. I mean, their 2018 defense was phenomenal, and their offense still scored over 40 points per game. Their 2016 defense was pretty flipping good, and their offense scored about almost 40 points a game. So you know, that's more of an Oklahoma problem. That's more of a Big 12 problem than it is one plus one equals two when it comes to, you know, having a high octane offense. Look at Alabama. I mean, Alabama was not as good as they've been in the past on defense, but they're still really good. They were still held teams under 20 points a game.
Right.
So, you know, that's the key is that to me, Vince, if you adopt that philosophy, and you say, this has got to be who we are. So right now it's ball control. We're going to beat big boy football. You know, we're going to get power forwards at receiver. You know, we're going to get centers at tight end, and then we're just going to beat you up. That's their philosophy, and everything is built around that. The strength program's built around that. The practices are built around that. The game plans are built around that. The play calling is built around that. You can still be a physical rushing team, and actually I think they'll be better. I think if they go to a more explosive mindset, I actually think it'll make the running game even harder to defend, and we'll get into some of that next week. But, I mean, you look at Ohio State, they averaged like 260 rushing yards per game this year. Oklahoma, in some of the years they were really great on offense, was averaging like 240 on offense. So, again, this doesn't mean you can't be physical on offense. It doesn't mean that you can't run the ball a lot. I actually think it would make I also think it would take even more pressure off of your offensive line to where they don't have to be elite for you to have any chance to play. And as we saw against Alabama, your offensive line can still play really well, and you have no chance to play because of those other factors. And so, I mean, look, the year that – what was it? What did Baker Mayfield win the Heisman in? 2017? Was that the year?
Right. I think it's his third year in the league.
Yeah. Oklahoma averaged 217.8 yards rushing yards per game that year. They averaged 5.6 yards per carry.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
That's pretty good. You know, I mean, and they had the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. What did Notre Dame do this year rushing the ball? They were 211.1, 5.0 yards per carry. Oklahoma ran for more yards per game and over a half a yard extra yards per carry. And they were a team that was everyone views as a throwing team. Right. So it doesn't mean you don't have to run, doesn't mean you don't have great linemen. So that's where, if you don't do that, these next 3 points don't mean anything.
Right.
They're just kind of style things. If the number one explosive mindset doesn't change, these next three things aren't going to be as effective, at least not against good teams.
Sure.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the first of those three things is one that I've been harping on for a long time, and I know you and I have had many, many conversations about it, and that is they need to simplify the offensive scheme in order to get different guys on the field. And that's why, look, the reason to simplify is to get more kids on the field.
That's part of it for me.
That's a big part of it for me, but it's also, we talk about guys playing free and loose and that kind of a thing. It's easier to do that when you don't have to, take a calculus exam on the field. I mean, it is what it is, man. When you're not thinking, you're moving faster. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. So I'll let you expound on it a little bit, but, and what you mean by making the scheme easier. But the problem for me right now is it's so difficult that's why you've got all of these veterans that are playing offensively, because they're the only ones that understand what the heck is going on.
Right. And I want to say this too. I don't have any issue with Ben Skoranek and Javon McKinley.
I don't
being
either.
Your top two receivers this year. I mean,
I don't either.
My issue is that they dominated the reps the way in which they dominated the reps. And that there was no other options at receiver.
Exactly. There was no second group. I mean, there was those guys only came off the field if the personnel dictated it, like 13 personnel or whatever, where you're bringing more tight ends on, so you got to take the wide receivers off.
Right.
Other than that, they're on the field the whole game.
And there was a couple blowout games. They got Joe Wilkins in the game
and that's
or whatever.
Different, but yeah.
And then, but in the big games, when those guys do come in, it's just they're not getting the ball. They're just giving that other guy a breather. You know, simplify the system for me is twofold. Number one is, to your point, Vince, you have to look in this era of modern football. Teams are putting less and less pressure on their players mentally. And what I mean by that is, it doesn't mean that Alabama runs three plays. They don't. They actually run a lot of plays. They run a lot of different types of plays, but they're all built around similar philosophies, right? And so, you look at RPOs. We've talked about RPOs, for example. The thing about an RPO and why we harp on this is because an RPO is a relatively simple way for a good team to attack a defense. And what I mean by that is it takes pressure off your offensive coordinator to always have the right play call. It takes pressure off of your pass game because it doesn't require your quarterback to make these complicated, second, third, fourth read type of things. It's one read.
It's
simple as we're running inside zone, okay? And the offensive line and the tight ends and the running back are all running inside zone. However, based on game plan, we know that this team likes to take their boundary linebacker and they like to crash him inside to take away the cutback lane of the zone. So what we're going to do is we're going to bang a quick out route or a quick hitch route where the quarterback starts the handoff read. And if that guy crashes in, he pulls it and throws it. Or it could be as simple as before the snap, that guy's tucked inside and the window's open and you just catch and throw it. You don't even carry out the read. It's just catch and throw. And it's based off reading one defender.
And that's the hardest part from my stand. Now, I was coaching high school kids, but that was the hardest part is teaching the quarterback, from week to week to week, okay, which guy are we keying on in the RPO? But once they figured out who it was, they're like, wow, this is easy. If he does this, I do this. If he does this,
high school kids. Exactly. You know what I mean? That's the thing is like, the downfield reads, it's you're going to read the safety, right? And if that safety inserts into the box, you're pulling it and you're banging the post route behind it or a deep slant behind it. Alabama, one of the big plays they beat Notre Dame on early in the game was literally just a slant route. He was reading the backside backer. I think actually might have been the mic. I think the way I'm trying to remember to the side of the field they ran it on. I can't remember if it was the buck or the mic, but it was basically if the Notre Dame linebacker steps down to defend the run, you pull it and you throw the slant behind it. And that's what they did. And, they had Devontae Smith so they could win that route. But, I mean, look, Chase Claypool could win one-on-ones. Kevin, Braden Lindsay. There's Notre Dame's had a lot of receivers that can win those one-on-ones. Avery Davis won those routes a lot this year. He just never got the ball. So it simplifies that. It puts more stress on the defense because now it's like, well, if you focus on the run, then we're going to pull it and throw it. I mean, you talk about North Carolina. They have a quarterback that ESPN predicts is going to be a first-team All-American next year. Kid's been a very good player, Sam Howell. And De'Ami Brown was a great wide receiver, arguably the best receiver in the ACC this year, had over 1,000-yard receiving. But they were a team that had 2,000-yard running backs.
Right. Like,
again, to my point, you can run and throw out of this. But if you're going to be a team that builds around running the football, you have to have RPOs. A team that like USC can get away with not having RPOs because everything's a pass. And the run is almost like, keep you honest, by occasionally running the ball. But if Notre Dame did that, I'd say that's even worse than what Notre Dame is doing, you know? So simplify means it's partly the RPO aspect, but it's also bigger picture of when your guy lines up, he's got to know what to do. And it can't be, well, I got to make this complex read of what they're doing. It's line up and I'm calling a play and you're running this route. Now,
right.
Your route may alter based on the coverage, but it's you're altering your corner route. You're not changing it to a post curl. You know, that's the difference. And so, and then essentially the quarterback then, based on how you build your concepts, is okay, if they have this corner route covered well, then we know we're taking something else, you know? And I think part of the simplifying the system too is going to require more quick reads. Notre Dame is a very vertically oriented pass team. Even when they're throwing the ball short, it's built on a lot of vertical routes, and they just throw the checkdowns a lot and the crossing routes a lot. They run a lot of vertical routes, and it's a very pro-style offense, and there's not a lot of quick game. There's not a lot of screens, and there's just not a lot of things that allow your quarterback to get into a rhythm against a good team. And that's a big part of the simplification too is, you know, what's my read? Okay, there's 8 in the box. All right, so I'm going to pull it. I'm going to throw this little look screen to Braden Lindsay, let him go do something. If he only runs for 2 yards, okay, fine. He only ran for 2 yards. But the next time, he may go for 70. And when you have players like Braden Lindsay and Chris Tyree and Jordan Johnson and Xavier Watts, and in the past, Chase Claypool could be this guy, Will Fuller, Chris Brown, Amir Carlisle, CJ Procise, Josh Adams, Dexter Williams, you have guys that can be, on any given play, I can go 60, I can go 70. What simplifying the offense does is it makes those players even better because now they're thinking less and they know what they're going to do. I know what I'm running on this route. Now, if I know what I'm running, then that allows me as a receiver's coach to say, I can focus more on the technique of the routes that exactly. are being run. That is a big difference that I see is Alabama's receivers are talented, but they're incredibly well coached. One of my biggest beefs of the Notre Dame receivers, especially in the last 3 or 4 years, has been they don't really know how to run routes all that well. They just it's scheme driven. And you watch Chase Claypool as a rookie, and he's doing things that are making him so hard to guard. But it's like that's what sophomore receivers should be doing, you know. And that's something where you're seeing Notre Dame so scheme driven, and so I have to know these 3 or 4 different options on each route that I can't focus on what my route technique is. You know, I'm going to attack his leverage. I'm going to stem him this way. I'm going to do this little move at the top end because that's going to get me separation. It's what am I running here? Okay, he's there. He's there. Okay, yeah, I'm running this route. And hopefully I'm right. And hopefully the quarterback is also right because now
that's just a lot of moving parts to be right all at the same time. And I think that's the problem that I have is when you have all these opportunities and these choice routes and options and things of that nature, so many different parts have to be right at the same time for it to be a successful play.
Right.
And when you talk about the fact that in this offense, in this scheme right now, it's all about the perfect play call.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be the perfect play call, but if everybody's not doing the same thing and picking the same choose your own adventure chapter in the book, then you're not going to be successful. In an RPO type system, you're doing the same thing no matter what. The only person making the decision is the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very simple decision. It's A or B.
Right.
Now, you can get more complicated than that.
Right.
I'm simplifying.
And everything's not an RPO. That's the other thing.
And that's absolutely true. But I think that's where you can start because those are very simple things that anybody coming into the program can figure out.
Right.
A freshman knows, okay, on this play, I'm running a slant every time. Am I going to get the ball every time? No.
Right.
But I've got to be ready because I'm going to run a slant every time. Yeah, I mean, that's
right.
There's
on this call, I know what I'm doing.
Correct. That's what I'm saying.
Before I line up, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then it's up to the quarterback to determine who's going to get the ball.
Correct.
And so it takes a lot of pressure off the quarterback. Even though it sounds like you're adding pressure to the quarterback, you're really not, because he now has just that pre-snap read, and now his post-snap read's like this one defender. He's got to make the pre-snap read now, as opposed to what Notre Dame does, which is, okay, I think this guy's going to run a corner based on what they're doing, but I'm not sure. There's going to be some hesitancy where I know he's running a corner, and I know based on the pre-snap read, I'm reading this smash concept in the boundary. That's what we're reading. I know I'm reading the double post to the field, or I know I'm reading the backside corner on this corner drag route that we broke down for Alabama. So it is simplification. Now it doesn't look simplified because you're still running a decent amount of stuff. And I've always been a believer that I would rather you run less stuff and be really, really good at it. And I think that's what you see at Alabama. They run a good number of routes. They run a number of concepts, but they don't run all those concepts in the same game,
out of the same formation.
Or the same formation, exactly. So they'll run it. They'll run the same concept. This time, Devontae Smith is backside running the corner route. The next time, he's the one running the cross. The next time, he's running a backside comeback because that's where we think our matchup can be. Or we know that Alabama. We know that this team is going to overreact when Devontae is the outside field receiver. They're going to go basically. They're going to treat a two-receiver set almost like trips because they're so afraid of Devontae. So we now know we can isolate backside and get some looks. You see what I'm saying? And so,
yeah, no, absolutely. And we're venturing a little bit into scheme.
Right. But it's part of you can't do that. You can't have your receiver play three different positions in the same game if he has to know three or four different options on every pass play
off of every
on each of those places. So by being complex, you make your offense easier to game plan for if you're a good defense. By being less complex and more simplified, you can now do more things that make it harder for teams to get a read on your offense. It may not sound like it makes sense, but it makes sense. And if you watch football games, you're going to see that. So that's why simplifying the offense to me doesn't mean you run five plays. It just means you put less responsibility on each individual player.
Exactly.
And you now find ways to protect certain guys. And now you can, when you have a more simplified offense where when we call this play, you run this one route. To your point, Vince, that means Jordan Johnson doesn't have to know three routes per play. He can know one. And now he can play more. And he can play 15, 20 snaps a game. You can get him two or three targets early in the year. Same with Xavier Watts. Same with... You know, in the past, you don't have to play Freddie Canteen and Cam Smith and Chris Fink for over 100 snaps against Georgia while Miles Boykin and Chase Claypool get 12 combined. You don't have to do that. You can now get your best players on the field and you can tailor what you do because, hey, look, Jordan only knows these four routes.
Okay.
And when he's on the field, we'll use him in those four routes, but he can run those routes from the boundary. He can run those routes from the slot. He can run those routes from the field because this is the call. And it just makes it easier to get younger kids on the field. So that's why simplifying the offense is important. And then you can be more versatile, and we'll kind of get it to point four. We'll talk another reason why simplification is more important. But before that, we've got another kind of point to make on this.
Well, and you make a really good point because, again, the less thinking you have, the faster that you can play.
Right.
And that leads us into our third point where you can mix up the tempos of your offense. There are times when going fast can be very beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Absolutely. And you can name a bunch of different opportunities where that can be beneficial, or you can slow things down.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be very beneficial to you. Controlling the offense doesn't mean controlling the clock necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's controlling the tempo.
There you go. You're 100% right.
And I think that is where Notre Dame can be, they can take over a ball game by controlling the tempo.
Right.
And you can make the analogy of Mike Bray and his burn offense, you know, which is really boring to watch, but they suck clock and they limit opportunities for the other team. I get that. Or you speed it up and it's almost like being on a fast break. Now, in order to speed it up though, having those less complex offensive right. ideas that makes things go you even faster.
Cannot run tempo the way Notre Dame runs their offense.
Well, right, and because
not with any consistency. No,
and one of the reasons, and again, this is kind of from a scheme standpoint, you've got wide receivers running opposite sides of the field and everything when you're trying to go fast, and that can be, you know, if each receiver knows each position, you can stay on your side of the field.
Yeah, well, and if they know the concepts, you know,
that's
the thing.
What I'm saying.
The concept is the concept. And, yes. and I know that if I'm field number one, I have a post. If I'm backside exactly. number one, I have an out.
Right.
You know, and then you can get into more things where if you want to have some complexity, when you have a veteran quarterback like Ian Book, then you sure. can give him more things where if he sees an open, you know, an opening to the boundary. An opening means like, they're playing cover four and that linebacker's tucked inside. So that's it's open. The window's open.
In the flat.
Corner's playing off and he's got his back to the sideline. Hey, you know what? I look over at my boundary. Hey, Javon, I'm making a check. Running out cut. We're going to do. Now you just audibled to one route, right?
Exactly.
It's simple. It's, hey, bang this, right? And it can be, we're calling an inside zone play. And, you know, I'm going to read it. But if they do post snap what I think they're going to do, then I'm pulling and I'm banging the out cut. And if they don't, if the safety comes into that window, or if the linebacker drops, that's okay because I'm handing it off on the inside zone anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So there's complexity within the simplification. And the tempo, by going tempo, you have to be somewhat simplified. And when Notre Dame has had success in tempo, if you go back and look at this season and last couple seasons, it's usually early in the game when they purposely come out in tempo. But the reason they're able to do it is because it's off the script.
It's scripted. They've run this in practice.
Right. And they know the plays. But once they go off the script,
they're done.
It's a lot more complicated because now it's back to sort of the complex offensive game plan. I think that mixing up the tempos not only makes it better for your players, but I think it's better for Tommy Rees as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it gives him more weapons that he can utilize. Hey, look, we just had a really physical, time consuming. We beat that other team up on that last drive. Cause there's going to be times like that. You know, Alabama had two long drives against Notre Dame early in the game. So you say, hey, we really beat them up. So what do you want to do on the next drive? Do you want to beat them up again? Or do you want to let's go fast? Because we just physically beat them up right now. Let's make them run around and chase us for this next series.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now the defense is like, what in the world do we do now?
Yes. It keeps the defense on their heels as far as, oh, man, what are we going to do?
You don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be – tempo doesn't mean throwing the ball. It doesn't mean you don't go too tight. I think the thing about Notre Dame's tight end personnel and their running back personnel –
you're going to say exactly what I wanted to say next.
Go, say it. Say it. No, go for it.
It's going to be – if you're going tempo and you're not subbing, then the defense can't sub.
Correct.
Right? So, but with Notre Dame's personnel, the guys that they actually have on their roster right now, if let's say you're in 12 personnel. Just as an example. So you got two tight ends on the field. You can run too tight and you can run the ball right at their face.
Mm-hmm.
You could split both of those
guys
out.
You can go overloads. You can do all types of things. Yeah.
King, queen, whatever you want to call it. You can go trips to one side, single receiver to the other. You can go empty because guess what? Notre Dame's running backs are really good in the slot. So,
all of Notre Dame's tight ends are good pass catchers.
Yes. So you can do all of those things with Notre Dame's personnel without subbing.
Yeah,
which
you
means,
can put your two tight ends on the outside, put your two receivers in the slot, and then see how the defense is going to handle them. Then you may call inside zone the first time, but if they're going to put their linebackers way outside the box, run it at you. And if they want to keep their linebackers inside, now you have some slot mismatches with your slot receivers against their linebackers. And say, you know, or if they want to go put a 5'11 cornerback out there on Michael Mayer, we're banging a fade cut. You want to go two back in a series. You can literally put Kyren Williams in the slot every play with Chris Tyree at running back and be an 11 personnel.
Yep.
And then the very next play, you've got two running backs in the backfield. And the way that Kyren Williams blocks and you have a tight end in the game, you can still go with some heavy run stuff. So mixing up the tempos allows you to do a lot of different things.
Yep.
And this kind of leads into our fourth point. We're kind of already cheating ahead and looking to the fourth point. But the point is that tempo – The way that Notre Dame has recruited, there actually are some benefits to their tempo because there's not a personnel package that Notre Dame runs that locks them into
exactly
run heavy, pass heavy. There isn't. And if anything, Notre Dame's two tight end sets is more conducive because you can put Michael Mayer at any position on the field and he's going to have a mismatch one way or the other. Either a linebacker that can't run with him or a safety or a corner who isn't big enough to defend him. Because here's the deal. Nobody else that Notre Dame's going to play has Kyle Hamilton in safety.
Right.
Nobody else has a 6'4 kid that can line up and somewhat lengthwise run with handle Michael Mayer. None of them have it. And that's what makes Kyle Hamilton's kind of a unicorn and such a great player. I mean, he's instinctive and athletic, but also, let's be honest, being 6'4 helps. If he was 5'11, he'd still be a good player, but he wouldn't be what he is.
Yeah,
let's be real about that. So I think that you know, and what we're not calling for is the Chip Kelly Oregon offense where you're trying to run 100 plays. I think there's a happy medium between that and what Notre Dame does now. And I also think that Notre Dame would not benefit by being a nonstop tempo offense. I think that would somewhat take away from their strengths. And if you look, Clemson's not a nonstop up-tempo offense. Ohio State's not a nonstop up-tempo offense. Neither is Alabama, neither is LSU. There needs to be some method so you can see what the defense is doing and getting a play calling in there, but there needs to be some quickness to it. And because the problem is when Notre Dame goes as slow as they do, they now give the defense a better chance to get the right play call.
Exactly.
That doesn't hurt you against most teams because even if they have the right play call, you're just still better than they are.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, right.
It hurts you against Clemson. It hurts you against Alabama. It'll hurt you against the better teams on the schedule. It's hurt you against Georgia. And to where now you're winning or losing those games because your players are just better than theirs. Well, when their player, even if you have slightly better players, if their players are coached up better and put in better positions, then that negates the slight advantage you may even have. And so that's why the tempos is one of those things where they don't know what's coming. Mm-hmm. They know that there's always a chance you could go fast, which makes it harder for them to be in a position where they can wait to get calls in. Because if they wait to get calls in, then they're going to find themselves not lined up or not having to call in. They always have to get the call in quickly. And then if Notre Dame decides to go slow, then they can make their adjustment and get the call in. But you now make the defense force themselves to simplify what they do, which now allows you as a play caller to have some stuff. Hey, look, this next series, because a lot of times in tempo, you're going to make two, three calls at once. Hey, we're going to go with a screen on first down. We're going to run buck sweep on snap two. And then on snap three, assuming that we're going to see this, be prepared for us to go double posts. Because we think the quick screen and the outside zone is going to force their safeties down. We're going to bang a double post on third. So you've already kind of got your play calls already worked out, right? And so that's the nice thing about going tempo. It allows you to kind of set them up for more plays to create those explosives, which goes back to point one. The more you have a defense on their heels, Vince, the harder it is for them to stop you when you have really good players. Absolutely. And Notre Dame's always going to have really good players on offense.
Well, and the versatility, I mean, gosh, offensive coordinators around the country would kill for the versatility of Notre Dame's offensive skill players. I mean, they just would. What we talked about with Notre Dame's tight ends and what they're able to do and the running backs and what they're able to do, I mean, the versatility is amazing. You can do so much with that group. And moving into point number four, because of the versatility of that group and because of the versatility of the guys on this roster, you can then use more personnel and go deeper into that roster and really benefit from the talent that is on this roster. Because what did we say, you know, 5-6 years ago about Notre Dame is that they were pretty darn good, you know, on an 85-man roster, let's say, because we're not talking about walk-ons. Like 1 to 30, Notre Dame is pretty darn good. It was the 30 to like 65.
Some years it was like 1 to 12.
Right.
You know, like 2012, it was like 1 through 10. They can play with anybody. But after that, there's a big gap.
But you understand what I'm saying.
Right.
Now, Notre Dame's 1 through 85 is pretty darn good.
Right.
And
right.
you can and using that depth to your advantage is a huge thing to
you.
I mean, that Notre Dame needs to take this depth out and see what it can do for them. You know what I mean? Take it out for a spin and see what it can do for them.
So for me, Vince, there's two aspects to using more personnel. Number one is the obvious one, and that is, you know, mixing up 11, 12, 21, you know, doing more things. I mean, there's that part of it. And I think that with tempo is really good. I like that with tempo when you can, hey, one series we're in two tights, the next series – you know, we're in one, you know, four receivers, no tights. You don't know what's coming. And then this series, we're going to go slow. We're going to motion. We're going to shift. We're going to do all these things. The next series, we're just lining up and we're just going as fast as we can. So I think there's that. But the other part of it, to your point, is using more of your personnel. Mm-hmm. And I think when you have an explosive mindset, when you simplify your system, when you're able to mix up tempos, when you've made it more conducive to learning, then, you know, Jordan Johnson doesn't have to have as firm of a grasp on the offense as Javon McKinley. Xavier Watts doesn't have to understand the offense and all the nuances of it as well as Ben Skowronek or Avery Davis does. You know, you eliminate that to a degree. And then you say, look, this is all this kid can do. Clark Lee's done a great job on this on defense, and where he'll say, look, this is what Isaiah Foskey's good at. So guess what we're not going to do? We're not going to ask Isaiah Foskey to do things that aren't on this list of things that he's good at.
Right.
And you know, that's why Isaiah Foskey wasn't getting 40, 50 snaps a game. And that was the thing, is like, well, they should play him more. Look at the sacks he gets. He's being successful because he's not playing 50 snaps a game.
Yeah, right.
They did that with Kyle Hamilton in 2019. They didn't ask Kyle Hamilton to do as much as they asked Alohi Gilman to do.
They didn't ask him to start. I mean, he was the guy that came in as a benefit to what they were doing defensively.
And they would do three safety stuff, or they'd go to a rotation, but he always had that veteran with them. They weren't going to ask him to do all that. They said, here's what he can do, and we're going to let him do what he can do. And the offense needs to adopt that. It's even more conducive on offense because, you know, you can also, I think what that also allows you to do is it's going to allow you to mix up your personnel. So like one week you may look at a team and say, boy, we're really going to throw a lot of receivers at them. And so then your next opponent's preparing for Jordan Johnson and Xavier Watts. But then you say, based on your scouting, we think we can hammer them with our bigger sets because they're undersized. They're not. And so they are preparing for these three, four, five, six receivers. And then you come at them and you're just throwing George Takkus and Michael Mayer and Kevin Bauman and Kane Barong at them, or you know, you're running a bunch of receiver, running back stuff at them that they are, you know. So each week it's going to look a lot different. And that's the thing I loved about Alabama is there were some weeks when, you know, Alabama would be a lot of three receiver stuff. And then the next week they're in two tights more than Notre Dame is.
Yeah.
You know, and it just would be game plan related, but you just never knew what we're going to be able to do. And I think that's part of it, because I'm going to throw a stat at you that just everybody says, well, you know, there have been freshmen that have played. It's been rare, and in the years where they have had freshmen play, it's because there were no other options or everybody else was young. So Kevin Stepherson in 2016 played because guess what? Everybody else on the roster was a freshman or sophomore except for Torrey Hunter. And guess what happened in the first game of the year? He got knocked out and didn't play the next two games, and Kevin Stepherson got his shot and made plays, and that gave him a chance to get in the game. Right? So Will Fuller, Chase Claypool, Miles Boykin, Equanimee St. Brown, Kevin Austin, Braden Lindsey, DeVaris Daniels, Javon McKinley, Jordan Johnson, and Xavier Watts combined for 17 catches in their first seasons at Notre Dame.
Combined. Yikes. That's what, about 1.2 catches a person?
Yeah, and 11 of those were from Claypool and Will Fuller.
Yeah.
Claypool caught 5. Will Fuller caught 6. So, to me, Equanimee St. Brown caught 1, Boykin caught 0, Kevin Austin caught 5, Braden Lindsey caught 0, DeVaris Daniels caught 0, Javon McKinley caught 0, Jordan Johnson caught 0, Xavier Watts caught 0.
Right.
That is not a receiver player talent problem. That is a coaching problem.
Absolutely. And we know what a lot of the names that you just read off, we know what they ended up being at Notre Dame once they finally got on the field.
Right.
So you can't make the argument to me that every one of those guys was a dud when they first got to Notre Dame, and then all of a sudden they were amazing.
Yeah, and then like in the case of like Will Fuller, he went from 6 catches as a freshman to 76 as a sophomore.
Right.
You know, so did he really get 70 catches better in one offseason? Another example, Kyren Williams. Kyren Williams carried the ball 4 times last year. This year he's a second-team All-American on Sporting News. Did he really get that much better to where he went from never getting to play to, you know, 1,000 yards? Did he get better? Of course he got better. Was he able to be a 20-carry guy as a freshman? No.
That's not what we're saying.
Right. And so that's the frustrating aspect of it. So – The Michael Mayers, the Chris Tyrees are rare at Notre Dame. They're not used that often at Notre Dame. And the reality is that you're limiting yourself. When you go play Clemson in 2018 and you've got Miles Boykin and Chase Claypool and Alize Mack and Cole Kmet and Dexter Williams, that's pretty good. But those Braden Lindsey, Kevin Austin, Lawrence Keys combined for Tommy Tremble combined for 0 snaps, I think, in that game. 0 snaps, much less targets. How good could you have been if you would have used Claypool, Boykin, Dexter Williams, Alize Mack, Chris Kolkmet, and Kevin Austin, and right. Braden Lindsay, and Lawrence Keys.
Right.
You know what I mean? And those are the frustrating things. And say, well, we're trying to redshirt Braden Lindsay. Why? Right. A guy like that's not a five-year player. You know, and you won't want him for a fifth year because that means his speed is gone and he's not a dynamic player anymore. So you don't want him. So it to me is they've just – Notre Dame has so much in this – in their career. And you point to like Josh Adams in 2015. Look at all the yards he ran for. He barely carried the ball except in mop-up duty his first year. You know, his numbers came after he was injured. I mean, he came off the bench against Texas, had five carries for 49 yards, two touchdowns. The next two games he had three carries and two carries. Then he had 13 carries against UMass in a blowout. Then he had two for 2 yards against Clemson, eight carries in a blowout over Navy. Against USC, he comes off the bench in the first half, runs for 26 yards, doesn't get another touch. So sound familiar right. with Chris Tyree? Then the next week against Temple, he gets zero carries and they barely win. And then CJ Procise gets hurt. And all of a sudden, Josh Adams learned how to play running back.
Yeah, right.
147 against Pitt, 141 against Wake Forest, 168 against Stanford, averaged 5.6 yards a carry against Ohio State. Like, did the light just go on for him miraculously the moment that CJ Procise got hurt? Or was he capable of that the whole year? They just didn't utilize him.
Divine intervention.
And that's the whole point that I'm making is you look at Tyler Eifert in 2010, right? When Kyle Rudolph was at Notre Dame. I think Tyler Eifert that year, and again, this is just another point. Tyler Eifert that year, I'm pulling it up now, he had one catch in the first six games of the year. One. And then Kyle Rudolph gets hurt, and then the next six, seven games, he goes 4, 4, 5, 2, 4, 3, 4, 4, 72, 42, 61, 15, 78, 36, and 31. Why didn't you use that when you also had Kyle Rudolph? You know, so those are the frustrating things is Notre Dame has underutilized so much talent over the years because of its insistence on playing offense the way that it has played offense.
Sure.
If Brian Kelly gets – and part of that I understand because he never – when you're at Grand Valley or Cincinnati, you're not going to be 6-7 receivers deep. So what you have to do is you have to say we're going to – we have – here's who we got and here's what we're going to do. Well, you're at Notre Dame now and your receiving core now is a whole lot better than the days when you had to play Robbie Parris and Daniel Smith. Right. Yeah,
facts.
So yeah. I get it back then. But now there's no excuse not to play Jordan Johnson more or Xavier Watts more and those players more. And that's really where it needs to be better, where Notre Dame has to start utilizing their talent more. And until they do that, they're always going to underachieve. That doesn't mean Lorenzo Styles plays 50 snaps a game next year. But if he doesn't play at least 5 to 10 snaps a game early in the year, you're just not doing this thing right.
No, I think those are all really good points. And the thing is, everything that we have brought forth in this podcast and that you did in your article over on irishbreakdown.com is that all of these things are doable with this roster, with the, you know, the recruiting, the way that they're recruiting, with the coaching staff that they've got. Everything's in place to do everything that we just said. It's just you have to change at your core
right.
with your philosophy in order to make right. that happen. And look, and you've made this point before, and I'll make it again now that we're about to wrap up, is that this is the perfect opportunity
yeah.
because of the turnover, mm-hmm. because of the schedule mm-hmm. in 2021, and because of what the schedule is going to be
right.
in 2022. This is a pivotal offseason, and this is the perfect opportunity mm-hmm. to make these changes now.
And the biggest one is the offensive line, because your offensive line is not going to be anywhere close to what it was in 2020. I don't care how good
sure.
the guys coming back are. They don't have 100-plus career starts like this unit did. They just don't.
And that's a fact.
That doesn't mean they're not going to be good. 2018 right. offensive line was good. It just wasn't elite. And right. when it wasn't good, it hurt the offense. People acted like Notre Dame's 2018 offense was garbage. It wasn't. It was good. It just wasn't great because you lost Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson, sure. Alex yeah. Bars got hurt early in the year. You had some big losses. But they were still good. They just weren't great, but the system requires them to be great for it to really work. And what the offense is, the change that we're talking about, simplifying things, RPOs, and we'll get into some scheme things too. Those things are going to allow that offensive line to play better. It's also going to take some of the pressure off of them. So if teams want to load the box against them, you're now throwing it behind them, right? Being more and some of the looking ahead to some of the schematic stuff, being more perimeter pass oriented, quick games, screens, things like that, if you're successful with those, running more RPOs where you're just banging those quick outcuts and just stealing 6 and 7 yards, things like that, because that's some of the great things. It's not, RPOs aren't always these 40-yard gains. It's first and 10, you get 6 yards, bam. Mm-hmm. First and 10, you get 6 yards, bam. That's great. And so so you look at that and you say, that takes a lot of pressure off the offensive line, because now you're spreading the field. You're limiting the ability for teams to come in the box against your two tight end sets or your running back sets and say, hey, you want to load the box? That's cool. We're just throw it. If we have to pull it and throw it, we'll throw a 6 yard outcut every time till you stop.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and then there'll be things behind. If you want to try to take that, we've got, there's all types of different things you can do with the RPO based offense that are going to basically say, if you want to load the box, we have answers for you. We're going to throw it to the open guy, you know, and we'll still run the ball. You know, if you keep your guy out there, we're going to still hand it off. And so you take pressure off your line. So that's to your point of what does that mean to the perfect timing? You're not going to have a quarterback that's got 30 plus starts under his belt at Notre Dame. He's not going to have all the intricacies that Ian Book had or the experience Ian Book had. You don't have Chase Claypool coming back. You don't have fifth year receivers coming back. You don't have these things. So now's the perfect time to do it, because there's less deprogramming you have to do. That's the other part. It would have been hard for Notre Dame to completely change this past offseason. Right. I get it. It really would have. You got 5 returning starters. You've got Ian Book. I get the hesitation to do it. Those hesitations aren't there anymore. I still would have done it. That's not the point. But I'm saying I'm more sympathetic to why they didn't do it. Now, no RPOs is ridiculous, but I get it. My point now is, Vince, they're with a new quarterback, with 4 new starting offensive linemen, with a bunch of new skill players, there's no excuse now to not do it. And it's also more conducive to getting more out of your best players coming back. This type of offense is going to be better for Kyren Williams. It's going to be better for Chris Tyree. It's going to be better for Michael Mayer. So it also benefits your best players. So there's really no reason not to do it. And there's no reason not to do it now. And that's why I've said, and I'll have an article and a podcast coming about this down the road, that's why this offseason is going to define Brian Kelly's legacy.
Agreed.
His willingness to make the necessary changes, which he's done at times on defense, his willingness to make the big changes on offense this offseason is going to determine whether or not he's just who he is, which is a really good coach that's got Notre Dame to be a really good program, but not a real title team, or if Brian Kelly is capable of getting that ring, getting that championship, which then leads to the statue. So if he cares about his legacy, ultimately, these are the changes that he needs to make, because I think he has the potential to take Notre Dame over the hump. He brought him here. He can get him over the hump, but it's going to require a change. Just like Mack Brown was willing to make that change at Texas. Mack Brown had a way of doing things, and Texas was good. They were 9-10 wins a year, but they would get their butts kicked by Oklahoma, and they'd get their butts kicked on the big stage. Then they made a change to a more up-tempo, explosive offense. And what happens? They go out, and in year 2 of doing that, they won a title. Mm-hmm. And that's where Notre Dame is. You do the right things, you got a chance in 2022 with that schedule, with the players you're going to have coming back, to be a title contender. I truly believe it. But you're not going to do it if you wait till then to make those changes. You got to get a year under your system in the belt. And then by the end of that 2004 season, you go back and watch Texas in that Rose Bowl against Michigan. That offense started to click late in the year. And it carried over into 2005, and they were just an elite, elite football team that year. And you had to be to beat Texas or to beat USC. You had to be. Look how good Notre Dame was in 2005, and they couldn't even still beat USC. You know what I mean? So
Right.
We've seen it done. We've seen it done with legendary coaches who did a lot of great things but couldn't get their team over the hump. Mack Brown was willing to make those necessary changes, and it got him a title. If Brian Kelly can do it, I truly believe that Brian Kelly can end his career with that same level of success, which will completely change his legacy at Notre Dame.
Well, we can all look forward to that, because I agree with you on a lot of those points, and that's going to be a fun one to talk about. But that's going to do it for today's episode of the Irish Breakdown podcast. Make sure you subscribe, like, review, however you do your thing when it comes to podcasts, because we're going to keep bringing them to you. And we're going to have our schematic one coming up soon for sure. I'm over here scratching down notes of things that I want to talk about during that one. And I'm sure Brian has obviously done the same thing. And tomorrow the plan is that we're going to talk about Marcus Freeman's defense and what that looks like when he was at Cincinnati, what we think that that's going to look like at Notre Dame, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So looking forward to that one. So tomorrow is Marcus Freeman's defense. And look, make sure you stay locked into IrishBreakdown.com because there's always good information over there. We're covering it all. And so make sure you stay locked in over there. Brian, any final words?
No, I'm good to go, buddy.
All right, man. So for Brian Driscoll, I am Vince D'Addario, and we will talk to you next time on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.